Hi, this is Barb Mitchell, also known as Catherine Strogue in Haunting Melissa and Dark Hearts, and you are listening to A Dark Companion.
Hi, this is Zero, and you're listening to A Dark Companion, a Haunting Melissa and Dark Hearts podcast. I've got another special guest for everybody out there. Guest, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Barb Mitchell, and I am Catherine Strogue in Haunting Melissa and Dark Hearts, and I'm thrilled to be here, Zero.
Excellent. I'm thrilled to have you. This is great. This is a great opportunity to get to talk to all you guys, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So how did you first find out about this whole thing?
Well, basically, it was an audition call through my agent. Okay. It's just like any other job that you get as an actor. You get a notice from your agent telling you that you have an audition for this particular role, and I just loved it. It was a really challenging audition because my audition was basically the entire monologue that I do in Haunting Melissa, where I'm on camera, and so it was a lot of intense memorization and trying to figure out how to go there emotionally to imagine, some kind of demon or something coming up within myself and fighting. So it was a really great challenge. So I got the audition call, dressed slightly, to suggest the haggard religious woman that I'm supposed to be.
Yeah.
and waited in the waiting room with a whole bunch of other gals that in the same age range and kind of looking like me, and went in and met Neil, and it was just a blast. I've never had such a wonderful experience in an audition. Neil was just, from the get-go, he's just the most generous director and really gentle, and makes suggestions for you to follow, and wanted to make sure that I was okay, and if I needed a break before I tried it again. He's just the most lovely guy you'd ever want to meet. And lucky for me, he thought I was his Catherine Strogue, and we went from there, and it's just been a really exciting ride ever since.
Oh, that's excellent. That sounds like a really, really good experience.
Yeah.
Did you have any idea at that point that you'd be working with Greg and Cassie again after the Merry In-Laws?
I had no idea. And that was the funniest thing, because I knew I got cast. I got a notice from my agent, and then Neil wanted to meet us again in person. And so he wanted to gather some of the cast together to discuss the project. And we've just basically all showed up at this hotel and walked through the door, and I was like, oh my God, this can't be. It's exactly the same family. We must really look like a family because we keep getting cast together.
Yeah.
So we all had a really great laugh about it. And I don't think even Neil knew that we had just completed another project where, Greg played my husband and Cassia played my daughter. So it was a really, really funny moment because this is a completely different kind of film.
Oh, sure, definitely. I watched some of the Merry In-Laws and tried to imagine it was some kind of alternate reality Haunting Melissa. Didn't quite work.
I don't know if that'll work. Yeah.
It was worth a try. So having talked to all you guys, it seems like it's definitely a close-knit kind of community up there with the acting and all the projects you end up in. You were in, Hell on Wheels as well? Yeah.
Well, Hell on Wheels, technically I got edited out of Hell on Wheels.
Oh, really?
But I had a scene with Tom Carey.
Oh.
So that's the only other time I've worked with Tom, who's, Fedora the Explorer, Bim Blimp, or whatever you want to call him. And it was a much different scene because I was a Wild West whore and he was, the cowboy guy. And we had a meeting in the whorehouse, and it was supposed to start the initial first episode of Hell on Wheels, and it got cut out. I did a day on set with Tom, and we had a fun scene, but I got edited out. Boo-hoo. Oh, well.
What was it like working with Tom in this project?
Oh, well, it was great. You know, we didn't have a lot of days together. I mean, I was only on set for a few days myself. Sure. But I know Tom from the acting community. We see each other a lot at auditions and, you know, acting functions, screenings and things like that. And he's a wonderful guy. So I know Tom pretty well. Mm-hmm. And we were very comfortable together from the get-go. And we're just, I think the Calgary acting community is just so excited when we get great projects to work on, that we really cheer each other on, and we love to see people getting nice meaty parts and and stuff that's fun, you know?
Yeah. So you, before we started recording, you said that you were a big fan like the rest of us. I guess playing your role and being involved in the movie, you've had to hear a lot of what the backstory is, but maybe not everything. So do you find yourself speculating and wondering and coming up with theories like the rest of us?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we get a script initially and you delve into your part and try and figure out where you fit in that puzzle. But when the whole project comes out, it's just incredible to see the visuals and everyone else's performances and the storyline just really come to life. And I found it fascinating because there's a time lag between when you shoot the project and when it is released. And so you tend to forget some of the details. And I just really got addicted to it myself, just like everybody else. Mm-hmm. And trying to figure out, okay, is that the same? The box they found in the floor, is that the same box? Oh, no, I don't think that's different. So, you know, so you jump around and try and get your own theories and trying to figure out who the characters are, like Karis, you right. know. She's right. such a mystery. You get hints from the Haunting Melissa characters as to who she was. But it can go just about anywhere. And I really love digging into it. And I love the discussion board on Dark Hearts.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things I missed and I went back to find them. It's like, oh yeah, I didn't see that dynamic story element there. Oh yeah. That's awesome.
I actually got a couple of questions off of Twitter for you from fans sure. and also from your buddy, Tom Carey.
Oh, okay.
Well, this first one is going to be from @Lundstrom721. How did you prepare for your character as Catherine Strogue? And do you have a deep, dark secret that motivated you?
A deep, dark secret? I don't know if I have a deep, dark secret that motivated me, but...
you probably wouldn't say if you did.
I had to go to a really dark place for that. And it was... I mean, I'm not an overly religious person, so I had to put myself in a place of desperation, really, when I was preparing for Catherine, because whether she was initially really religious or not, this was her one thing that she had to cling to try and fight this force that was taking over, you know, her being and her daughter as well. And mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a mother. I have three kids, so you would die for your children. Sure. So that's the most, you know, that's the basic thing, is if something is threatening your children, you will do whatever it takes to protect them. And for me, it was a lot of it was really physical as an actor trying to prepare for my particular scene, because it's such an internal struggle feeling this force coming out of you, that my breathing had a lot to do with it. You know, prior to the scene, I would try to psych myself out and imagine something fighting me from within, and just that fierce protection and desperation and, you know, fighting to the death kind of thing. It's really a kind of a mind game as an actor. You know, you try to put yourself in that position as much as you possibly can, and you have to use your imagination a lot and conjure the feeling. And once I got on a roll, it was great. Like on set, when we were doing it, I never wanted to stop in between takes, because mm-hmm. you get your body into that state where you're breathing heavy and you're tense and you're, you know, it was exhausting. I was totally spent by the end of it. But once you get there, you don't want to let go. Neil would always say, you know, do you need a break? And I'm like, no, let's go. And you just keep going for it. And it's lovely because you learn your lines, but when you get in that state, you don't think about the lines. It just spews out of you and it can transform into this wonderful thing that you never imagined.
Was part of it, I don't know exactly how to ask this. Do you know any of the kind of the backstory that we haven't been shown about how, Jack and Catherine and Karis and how all of that, you know, how we got where we are now? Was that something that you were told so that you could work with that? Or is it kind of not unknown to you?
Well, you know what? We're given the script. Neil tells us a little bit about the characters, but he doesn't reveal everything. So that's why I'm a fan like everybody else, because I don't know all of the secrets. I mean, clearly me and Jack and Karis and Amanda Maynard, we all were in, you know, the cellar doing bad things. Right. And it's come back to bite us in the butt. But it's interesting because I'm trying to you kind of have to write your own story in your head when you're developing your character. Sure. Because clearly Jack did something far worse than I did. Because in my mind, because Karis comes after him and, you know, spoiler alert, his end is horrific.
Yeah.
Where my end is kind of controlled by me. I fight it to the end.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're coming from different perspectives. And I mean, I don't know if there's going to be more coming from Neil. Well, I'm certain there's going to be more coming from Neil. I don't know if it's going to be this particular, he's got so many irons in the fire with his creative brain.
Sure.
But I would love to know what happened that day down in the cellar, just like everybody else. I'm dying to know the details.
Yeah. It's such a big part of the story. The fact that we know something did happen, but we don't really know what happened or how they even found out about what, I don't know. It's very strange. Well,
Amanda Maynard revealed a lot, I think, in The Haunting Melissa, talking about Karis and how there was sacrifices and, thinking that we locked this away and it wasn't going to come back. But
and Karis had some powers, and she, you know, it was promised that you'd all get them too. But you know, it's very interesting. And then,
and just the power that it wields too. I mean, she in my monologue, I talk about Mr. Berger, a teacher, and
right.
He had a flesh eating disease, and just the different ways that this entity can attack or destroy or control is fascinating. I love the fact that it can sort of travel through energy, like the whole, you know, voices through the radio and the computers
and
all that stuff. I love that. one thing that I don't know Morse code, but I heard that in the first one, the answering machine, the beeps, I heard that there was some kind of Morse code. I don't know if that's true or not, but
really?
That when Jack's answering machine keeps going and my voice is on it,
right,
that the red light has some kind of patterns in the beeps. So that's another thing that I haven't been able to figure out.
All right, I'm making a note of that.
There's a lot of patterns and symbols that are just fascinating. I love the amount of work that's gone into this project.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's that weird alphabet with the symbols that we had to figure out. Like, I love that there's that much detail and things that are in there. And it's risky because you don't know if anybody's going to actually bother to recognize a pattern and then look farther into it.
Yeah.
But it's great that there actually is something there.
Well, Neil's like a kid in a candy store. He's so excited. Every time we would meet, he'd have his iPad and he's like, do you want to see some of the special effects? It's like, of course I want to see some of the special effects. You know? And he's just so excited about the whole thing. He's just really exuberant and wonderful to work with.
I could certainly tell we have a Twitter group chat thing, and he seems to really enjoy every once in a while just throwing us some picture of something from behind the scenes. And then watching us all freak out about it.
It's great. It's so tempting not to take pictures of everything on set and go crazy. It's like, okay, I'm not allowed to reveal a lot of this stuff, but you know, it was fun being there.
And we all wonder what it is we don't know that actually is known, but it certainly seems like most of it is hiding in Neil's head.
Yes.
And so I can't wait to get more out of there.
We'll only know when he wants us to know. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the notifications, right?
Oh, yeah. Those are great. So a question from at the real Tom Carey. Tom Carey finally got on Twitter.
There you go.
Join. Oh, my. Sorry. I don't know if it got picked up on my microphone, but there's ice flying at my windows right behind me.
Really? Oh, my goodness. You got a storm going on there.
Yeah. I don't understand the weather here. Ridiculous. Easy. So Tom Carey says, please ask the beautiful Barb Mitchell, were Catherine and Jack ever truly happy together? Seems like a stretch.
Yeah, I have my doubts. I mean, we were clearly very young when all of this stuff happened, mm-hmm. in the town and in the cellar. I think my idea in my head anyway, I don't know what Neil's idea is that it's a small town, you know, and people end up together because there's, you know, this is your life in the town and you connect with certain people. I think we had a connection and I think we loved each other, but I think whatever happened with Karis and everything else completely shattered everything that we might have had.
Right.
I don't know if we ever had a real passionate relationship. I think we had a connection, and then it became a really bad connection.
That makes sense, yeah. Yeah, because I was thinking about, kind of the way that Catherine was dealing with it. You were talking about, you know, fighting it and doing everything on your terms, and then the way that Jack seems to think that Catherine blames him.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, and when you said that he seems to have done something worse, I'd never thought about it that way. But when you said it, it made me think, you know, if he's got this in his head that Catherine's blaming him, then there is some kind of a difference between what kind of they all did and something maybe more that Jack mm-hmm. did.
Well, that makes me think that, you know, back in the day in that cellar when they were making their sacrifices or whatever, that, in my mind, Jack was all for it, and I wasn't, because Karis is my sister. I don't, you know, you've got a sister, you have a bond, you don't want to lose your sister. It would be pretty hard to, you know, turn your back on your sister that way. And in my mind, Jack is the one that forced everyone's hand, but that's just a theory on my
part. Sure, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I've had moments where I was very suspicious of Jack. And it's come up on the podcast a couple of times when Melissa comes back home and her and Jack are talking outside and he hugs her and the camera's got that reverse angle where you can see just his face. And there's this slight hint of like a weird smile.
Yeah.
And something seems very sinister. I mean, and he even says to her, you know, how did you get back? Like he had no expectation of her being able to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly he knows more. And then he has that whole clandestine conversation with the visitor outside. And so you get more of a glimpse in the fact that he seems to be more intimately involved in things than anybody else.
I think so, but I also think he's been duped as well.
Sure, yeah.
You know, because he's not expecting to be taken away by that dark man, you know. He thinks he's going to sail away scot-free in the whole thing, I think. And I think it comes as a big surprise to him. Yeah. But I find it interesting, too, those characters, how different they are. Some of them have a horrible demise, and then others, like Amanda Maynard, is still around.
Right.
That's the question. Why is she not dead?
Right. I mean, she's clearly kind of losing it, and Catherine seemed to lose it some, too.
Yeah.
But her situation is different.
Maybe it has something to do with controlling the mind, and they can't control her mind or something.
Yeah.
Because she's lost it. I don't know. That's a question that I've had in my mind is why is, okay, Mike Gull's dead and, you know, everybody's dead.
Yeah, and Mike Cole seemed to have that same flesh-eating disease.
Yeah, Amanda's still sitting there in the psych ward.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I find that really intriguing, too. That's the great thing about this show.
Yeah, it's so much fun because there's real things to consider and to think about. And you'll always find something new that will make it absolutely worthwhile to go back and watch the whole thing all over again.
I know.
You get a whole new perspective.
Yeah, no, I've watched episodes over and over again. It's fascinating. It's really great. And then all the new characters. I mean, Dark Hearts is fantastic. Yeah. I just love, you know, the cinematography and the music and the sound quality and all the new characters really add a whole new element to how big the whole concept is with regard to the, you know, the Lancasters and planting these children to open the door all over the place.
Yeah. I've been trying to think of parallels between the Lancasters and the Strogues to try to see if I can get some answers there. And I don't know. I don't know if Jack made some kind of deal and what kind of deal it was. The Lancasters.
I don't know, but I mean, Carter is similar to the Lancaster.
Sure.
Child, right? So.
But which Lancaster child?
Well, Adam? The little.
Adam? Okay.
Yeah. You know, I mean, they seem to be taken over, and then there seems to be a power that wants people to open the door to the portal to let whatever come in and out. Mm-hmm. You know? Fascinating.
Yeah, it really is. It just makes you wonder. I don't know. Where do you think Catherine is, and Mike Cole, and now presumably Jack? Like, what is that other place behind the TV or wherever the heck it is that they get sent? Any theories on that, or do you actually know something?
I mean, I think it's hell. I mean, I've was saying to Jack, I'm coming to take you to hell.
Yeah.
You're not going to like it. A particularly nasty part of hell. Maybe because we made this deal with, you know, the devil, and then kind of reneged. We tried to protect Melissa.
Right.
You know, and it's like, maybe we made that deal, you know, that my firstborn or something was going to be surrendered over, and we didn't. We tried to hide her and keep her away from it. So I think we're all paying for whatever happened there, whatever that deal was.
Yeah. Curious what that deal was. The Lancasters, yeah. It was clearly to turn their life around and, you know, fix their money issues and their marriage issues and everything.
Right.
But then I'm wondering, like, what was going on with the Strogues? What did they want to get out of it? Or is it just the whole thing with Karis and these powers that they were supposedly going to get?
Mm-hmm.
Which seemed to end up making her powers stronger and, you know.
Yeah.
The flesh-eating disease with the math teacher, and then Mike Cole seems to suffer the same kind of fate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just after Goth Girl was in his hardware store.
So yeah. It
seems like that's related.
It's very cool. That's what makes this such a wonderful show, because it's endless.
Oh, yeah.
Possibilities.
Yeah, what else would you spend this much time after watching it? Just going over and over again and again.
Yeah.
And starting a podcast and talking to people about it all the time.
Mm-hmm. It's so good.
Well, Dead Airman 1 on Twitter, he was kind of curious about the fact that Catherine, you know, so Catherine comes back and takes Jack, so to speak. So she's kind of now involved with that other team, this kind of on the evil side of things. And he was just pointing out that, you know, she's still wearing a crucifix, but she's this kind of more evil entity. And, you know, how does that work? How does that play well together, you know?
Yeah, I get the feeling that once we are either taken or surrender control, that we have no control.
Sure.
That we are kind of the minions for this other entity to, you know, do whatever it wants to do, whether it's building more, you know, like an army of people that are going to be taking more sacrifices or just carrying out the wishes. I don't know.
Yeah.
Kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, Tom Carey kind of changed my perspective on Fedora the Explorer when he kind of mentioned, what is that, chapter 23, I want to say? Maybe 20. No, 24, mm-hmm. when I did last night for the Tumblr. He throws a flash drive in the fire and sits down and does his kind of signature creepy laugh. But then, was that really a laugh or maybe a cry? And I was like,
I got that totally from that scene. I watched that and went, I got that the instant that he did that, because there's no hope now. All the evidence just went up in flames. And like I said, I think we're all trapped in this world that we don't want to be in, and that we've all come from other places.
Right.
And maybe it was that, oh my God, we're never going to escape, kind of crying almost.
Yeah.
I
didn't catch that at first. And then when he said it, I went back and I was like, how did I miss this? That is the saddest scene this whole movie.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's interesting. I'm dying to know the connection between Deputy Roy and him.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if that's something that exists out there or not.
It feels like there's something there.
Yeah.
He seemed very confident in getting Mike Cole, like shutting up Mike Cole and haunting mm-hmm. Melissa.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something that it seemed like him, even though he was Deputy Roy. So I think there could be something there.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is with Dark Hearts, the fascinating thing is these time changes. Like when Melissa is in that warehouse and walks by herself, it's like, what? What?
That freaked me out so bad, because I must have watched it, I don't know how many times, before I actually saw that. And I was like, the whole time the other Melissa has been sitting right there.
Yeah.
That's so freaky.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, so is that just to look strange to have Melissa sitting there, or is it actually Melissa sitting there?
And I think it's Melissa sitting there.
Is she aware that she's in the two places, or are we seeing kind of an overlap of a past and present at the same time?
I don't know about that.
Or the duality is this bad, you know, dark Melissa walking out and the good one's trapped in that warehouse where it says in graffiti, she is possessed on the wall.
Mm-hmm. Or is there a way that Melissa can go back in time and control what she's done to draw more people in?
Oh, wow. It's everything's possible. I don't know.
I know. Yeah, well, and that's the thing too with Emma's mom and disappearing and
where did Emma's mom go? Did she ever come back? How did she know it was time to go? Was this the first time that she's ever disappeared? And if she didn't come back, who raised Emma?
But she knew they were coming.
Yeah, she
clearly.
Yeah, she just ran there, put her in the box, went outside. And then, in the timeline, because I've been trying to make a timeline of this thing, is this the first time the visitors come?
Yeah.
Or is this just sometimes he comes and goes, and so this is how he has to show up? Did she actually have to disappear for him to show up?
Or did the mother sacrifice herself?
Yeah.
To protect her child?
That's certainly possible.
You know? I think that's a possibility, too. Yeah. So many cool things.
Yeah.
So many cool things. You know, and it was a lot of fun to shoot all of this stuff, too, because the locations really are creepy. You know, the Strogue house is just this fascinating old home.
Yeah.
It is just frozen in time. We walked in. on the shooting days, and I guess the locations people found this, and it was someone's home, and I'm not too sure if the folks passed away, but everything is there, like all the furniture, the dishes, everything is there. Like the people from the home just disappeared. And it was so, you know, like it wasn't furniture brought in as set decoration. And, you know, I mean, clearly the crosses and some of the artwork and things like that were changed for the show itself. But a lot of the home itself is just preserved from years and years and years ago. It's just been sitting there. So it was a real find, wow. I think, for a location for Neil to get this house. Hmm. It was so like creaky, the stairs. Oh, yeah. Creaky and the doors.
It was to the point where it almost seemed like you had to have added in more of that creak because every door was just so loud.
They were like that, though. Yeah. Honestly, there was nothing added. It was a really creaky, creepy old house. It's a lot of fun. I never got down in that dungeon, though.
Oh.
That cellar, I would have loved to see. The crew was truly freaked out by shooting in there. It was, you know, the stroke house was creepy, but that I was talking to members of the crew and they just said that cellar, I had to get out of there. It is so creepy.
we didn't see you in the Maynard house, but did you ever get to go and see it?
I didn't, and I heard it's gone now. I'm very sad. But yeah, that's the gems of the locations here. And that's, I think, what drew Neil to shoot it here, because we have a lot of, you know, old rural farmhouses and some great locations that didn't need to be created. They're just there.
Right, yeah.
Like that graveyard is there. That's the real graveyard. They just added. It was kind of weird seeing your your character's tombstone there. But other than that, it's a real authentic old graveyard, and it's kind of cool.
Do you have? This is going to be a thing when I ask all of you. Do you have anything from set? Did you take any souvenirs?
No, I asked, though. I said, once it's all done, I really want a cross. I love one of the crosses just because it's such my character, you know.
Yeah.
But they're like, nope, we have to keep everything locked away because we never know what he was going to do next. So, they were pretty strict. They were pretty strict on that. But yeah, there's some cool pieces still all being held on to. Depending on what happens. So I can't wait to find out what Neil's next idea is.
Yeah, I'm eagerly awaiting that.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on the creepy old mansion?
Oh, wow. That is...
Like, it's just out of nowhere, and I don't know whose it is,
house, I'll tell you. That is the strangest house out in the middle of nowhere in rural Alberta. It's just crazy. You know, we got these convoluted directions to get to this place for, you know, shooting on that day. And it's so bizarre. From what I understand, I think it was built by some European diplomat or something. And it's, you know, it reminds me of The Shining. That staircase. I don't know. There's something about that house that makes me think of The Shining. And that's a really strange thing. I can't figure out the location unless it has to do with Fedora the Explorer. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's his old home or something, because he's kind of in charge of that, of what's happening to Farley that day. And that's the only thing I think of, is that it might be his home, or it might be the old lady.
Yeah.
Edna
Poser.
Because she's one of the ones first welcoming Melissa. Not a really nice welcome, but my theories on that is that it's either the old lady's home or the dark man's home,
and
where he's conducting this final
ritual,
ceremony kind of ritual, because, you know, that's where he throws the flash drive in the fire, and everybody gathers there. So that's my theory, is that it's his place.
Who are all of those other people?
Yeah. And everybody's drawn to come there.
And you were talking about, you know, the time difference in Melissa with the warehouse, but then also with that mansion.
Yeah. You
know, when Emma's there and there's, it's kind of windswept and there's leaves and stuff everywhere and it seems like nobody's been there forever.
Mm-hmm.
And then with Melissa and the whole ritual with Farley, everything looks more current.
That's right. It's more lived in. Yeah.
Yeah. So is that a time difference or is that a dimensional difference? Or did they take Farley back in time?
I think it's got to be a dimensional difference because, like, Melissa was only missing for 6 months or something.
Mm-hmm.
And the house isn't going to become that dilapidated and worn down in 6 months. So I think it's got to be a time shift. I think, you know?
So you're thinking that the situation with the mansion, and this is why the timeline, I need to finish that.
Or wait a minute, or is it reverse? Yeah, was it old and then fixed up? No.
Well,
I'm trying to remember.
The whole thing with Farley and the table and all of that stuff, did that happen while she was missing?
Maybe. That, you know what? That's probably right.
Oh, man.
Because...
And she's trying to block...
Maybe that's when she... Because she finally gives herself over. I mean, right. We see her face. It's just, oh, God, those effects are so great. With the stuff coming out of her face. Oh, amazing, amazing work by Hood.
Yeah, it did.
These guys do amazing effects and sound and love it.
I see your dog back there.
Yes, I know. I'm sorry. He was whimpering a little bit.
Oh, that's okay.
Hear some whining in the background. My little doggy.
Yes, once again, I have even more to think about. I never considered that. What if that happened in that space of time that she seems to have lost?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's certainly something I'd want to block out. So.
Yeah. Well, and that would make sense, too, wouldn't it? If she's missing because she was drawn and compelled to go to that location.
And then Jack wants to know how she got back. Because maybe that's not really how it should work.
Mm-hmm.
But something happened where she found a way to come back. Oh, man. This whole story just got crazier.
Oh, so good. It's good.
Man.
I just love all the theories on the chat boards, and
yeah
it's great. It's and I wonder what Jane's role is too. You know, if there's some characters that are completely innocent,
mm-hmm.
and taken over by that force, and a difference between the ones who willingly give themselves over and are committed to serve that force.
Sure.
I don't know. That sense.
Yeah, I mean, Melissa was definitely trying hard to figure out the truth and what happened to her mother and more active in it, where Jane just kind of seemed to just be hiding away in her room and just slowly going nuts.
Mm-hmm.
And, mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if they're in kind of parallel positions in the scheme of the deals and all of that stuff. And some people can handle it and some people can't. And that's the mm-hmm. difference between them.
Yeah.
And at one point we were speculating that Melissa was placed with the stroke, just like Adam was.
Just
trying to figure out like parallels between the events. Don't know.
And what are your thoughts on that, kind of demon thing that we see only rarely. We've only seen it a couple of times.
Shrub guy.
Walking away behind Jack once.
Yeah.
Shed.
Yes.
Which I completely missed. The shed thing I had to watch like so many times before I got it. Because of the shakiness of the camera, I'm like, what?
Yeah, I have a series of screenshots that I can scroll through back and forth and see it move around. It's very weird.
I was going and checking the script. I'm like, why? I missed that.
Is that the beast? Or is that just another one of these weird things from over there? I mean,
It's got to have meaning, though. It wouldn't be there if it didn't have some significant meaning.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, especially if Adam is acting as another dark heart kind of door. And, you know, Adam, presumably some kind of similar ritual, except that he decided to do with the robot doll.
Yeah, that is creepy, man.
And with
that,
whatever he butchered in his room.
The one in the shed is really creepy.
It's something about that allows the shrub guy to come over. Mm-hmm. But is that the beast? This seems different.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, because I was always trying to figure out teams on this thing. And, you know, the visitor is similar kind of to, say, Goth Girl. That they're kind of, they're not just regular people.
Mm-hmm.
But the things they do are different. She's kind of wispy and smoky and appears and disappears and stuff like that. And he does his teleport thing with the portal with Emma's mother and delivers children to people. And I got into my mind that he was kind of the leader of the whole thing. But then that sad moment in chapter 24 made me think, okay, somebody else is making him do these things and he doesn't necessarily want to, but has to do them.
So. Yeah, the thing with Karis and that whole wispy effect, it's almost angelic in a way. You know, when she takes over Amanda Maynard, and it kind of threw me for a loop because I'm like, oh, is she really totally evil or is there something else in play there? I don't know.
She doesn't seem to be actively trying to harm anybody else besides Mr. Berger and I guess Mike Cole. But she seems to be keeping an eye on Amanda and keeping an eye on Melissa.
Yeah.
She's just scary because she's scary looking, but she's not trying to be intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the chapters that she's in, the little portal icon for it usually has an eye on it. It's just that she's kind of watching.
Right. I want to know what Emma's necklace has. I'm dying to know what's in Emma's necklace. That's one of the things that's making me crazy.
Did you see, I don't know if you saw on Twitter, anybody posted, at Nambo Parfo made a replica of the necklace.
Really?
Yeah, it's a little jar with a little heart inside of it.
Oh, man, so good.
So it seems some kind of protection necklace, I guess.
Yeah.
Maybe to keep her heart from going dark.
Cool.
But who did she get it from?
That's right. Maybe her mother
knew
what was coming, and it's her little... But she didn't have it when she was little, though. Maybe...
No, she just had her little alligator stuffed animal.
Yeah, so I don't know where she would have gotten that. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Sometimes... Maybe she inherited it. Maybe it was in her mother's jewelry case.
Ah, sure.
Or something. I don't know, because it's got to have some meaning, because that's in one of the frames as well, and it's an interesting piece. I love the jewelry aspect.
Yeah, there's jewelry, and there's keys, and locks, and doors. I wonder, in all this speculation, I hope that we're somehow helping write the script for the next one.
Oh, I'll bet you are. I'll bet Neil and Andrew are taking all these ideas. It's like, oh, yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yes, it's so good.
Get into something incredible. Because they do amazing work. That's for sure.
Especially with something that's completely new, delivering a movie this way and getting it as right as they seem to have done.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is just the beginning of this whole concept.
Absolutely. It's so exciting. And it's really exciting to be a part of it, even though I just have a small part in it. It's very cool to see it all unfold and talk to Neil about his ideas and seeing it, you know, come to life in such a wonderful way. It's so engaging. I'm of the older generation, so even using an iPad was, you know, I had an iPad. I didn't use it that much until I did this, and it's, oh, man, so much fun. So intimate and so such a great way to watch something on film.
Yeah, you're not in a big theater with a bunch of other people you don't know and distractions and stuff like that. And it's on your device and you can look at it when you want to look at it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when you want to look at it, you can't because you haven't gotten the next chapter yet.
That made me laugh so much. People got so angry that they couldn't marathon through the episodes, but they still keep watching, right?
Oh, yeah, because you need to know. Because
you're dying to know. Building anticipation is a real art, and Neil's a master.
Oh, certainly, yes. So I'm really looking forward to the future of this thing.
Me too, and I'm curious to know all of the other projects that Neil might do in the future. He's just such a brilliant mind. And I think he's going to provide us with a lot of entertainment in the years to come.
Oh, I agree. Well, I want to thank you for coming on the show. This has been amazing.
Well, thank you. It's a lot of fun. And like I said, I'm a fan just like everybody else. It's a great project and I'm thrilled to be a small part of it.
Huge part. Well, can we have you again on in the future, perhaps?
Absolutely.
Excellent. Just
drop me a line and we can chat anytime.
Excellent. Awesome. Well, any final words for the fans out there?
I would just like to thank the fans for supporting this because it is such a brand new platform and format and nobody was really sure if people were going to totally embrace it. And people are just, you know, exceeding expectations. And I love the creativity that's coming from the fans, the ideas and the theories, and just keep them coming. We love it. We love it.
Absolutely. I know that we will. We talk about it every day.
Great.
Excellent. Well, thank you all for listening out there. This has been A Dark Companion. You can also follow our chapter-based episodes by looking at itwantstogetout.tumblr.com. And if you're just listening to this podcast through, say, your podcast app, you can go to adarkcompanion.com and see the podcast page and all the episodes there, as well as the PayPal link if you choose to donate to support the show. That would be awesome. Thank you, and we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks.